You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Two weeks from tonight is New Year's Eve. Goodbye, 2010s, and hello, 2020s. The end of a decade. Life in Michigan on the cusp of 2020 is quite a bit different than what it looked like in 2010. So let's reflect on the stories that most shaped Michigan over these 10 years. And to do that, we welcome Michigan Radio's Dustin Dwyer. So Dustin, let's start with something that our state is really noted for, which is water.
Yeah, water is always a big issue in Michigan. That was definitely true in the 2010s. I mean, I think when I started to reflect back on some of the biggest stories our newsroom covered, some of the biggest things that shaped Michigan in the 2010s, the first thing that came to mind for me was the Flint water crisis. And I think that's true for a lot of us. And you can trace it back to April 25th, 2014. Our reporter Steve Carmody was covering this. That's when the switch was flipped to take Flint off of Detroit water and switch it to the Flint River. And a lot of the problems, all of the fallout came from that moment. And as we know, it became just a huge, massive global cautionary tale.
In fact, yeah, it got attention all around the world, early on in the outside attention. I mean, we got Cher on Stateside to weigh in on it.
These children that are drinking this water, it will last in their systems, in their cells forever. I mean, that you can't just stand by.
And Flint wasn't the only water disaster Michigan faced in the teens, was it?
No, I mean, there was just all kinds of stuff. I mean, remember the Kalamazoo River oil spill with Enbridge? That happened in 2010. PFAS pollution, which has been around for a long time, it really wasn't discovered until the 2010s. It was a state geologist who wrote the first report in 2012. It took years for that report to really get out to the public. There were the water shutoffs in Detroit. The ACLU called it the largest residential water shutoff in U.S. history. There are still thousands of people in Detroit who have been shut off from water. There was the dioxane plume in Ann Arbor. There's dioxin, PCBs, PBBs, mercury, algae blooms. Remember the cyanobacteria, water withdrawals by Nestle. And of course, Line 5 was has been a huge controversy, is an ongoing huge controversy because it's in one of the most vulnerable sections of the Great Lakes. And even the problem with lead in the water has continued since Flint. The state has revamped how it tests for lead in water, and because of that, 20 more communities have had lead above the federal action level. That's 20 communities with high levels of lead in the water, many of them with higher lead levels than even Flint.
It is amazing, and I have no doubt that there'll be a lot of coverage in the 2020s on this issue.
It will continue to be an issue, yep.
Absolutely. So next up, Michigan's economy down and up.
Shock and panic evident on the faces of those on the trading floor.
We're in the midst of a serious financial crisis.
For Wall Street, it was another case of whiplash. The markets haven't been this volatile in almost 80 years.
Michigan has been experiencing a one-state recession. Now the rest of the country is getting a sour taste of what the state has been feeding on for a couple of years now.
Boy, that was something. So kind of walk us through the ups and downs, Dustin.
I mean, it was bad. I mean, you remember what it was like. Everyone who was here at the time remembers. And as a reporter, it was like every day there was a new plant closing. There was a office closing. There were layoffs all the time. And it was all you really heard about. People were looking for jobs. People were losing their homes. I mean, 1 in 8 people at the start of this decade was looking for work in Michigan. Michigan was leading the nation in foreclosures. There were just empty houses. We were losing people left and right. We lost more than 170,000 residents between 2004 and 2010. It was really, really bad. But I don't think anyone could have predicted or would have predicted just how much Michigan has roared back. We led the way into the recession, but we also led the way out of it for several years there. And the Michigan unemployment rate was below the national average through the first half of this decade. And now it seems like it's leveling off. We're in sort of a period here where we're not quite sure where it's going. But absolutely, the economic recovery of Michigan is one of the biggest things that happened here in the 2010s.
There is a corollary to the tough economic years, Dustin Dwyer, and that is the story of emergency managers in Michigan.
Yeah, and of course, Michigan has had an emergency manager law on the books for a long time, but it was in the 2010s when it really started to have to use these emergency managers because of the economy. So many cities, so many school districts were having these financial troubles, and the state just took them over and installed these emergency managers. The list is Detroit, Flint, Pontiac, Hamtramck, Allen Park, Benton Harbor, Ecorse, Three Oaks, Detroit Public Schools, Muskegon Heights Public Schools, Highland Park Schools. All of them were under the control of an emergency manager at some point during the 2010s. And it wasn't until 2018, when Highland Park Schools were removed from an emergency manager's oversight, that for the first time in 18 years, no municipal, no city, no town, no village, no school district in Michigan was under the control of an emergency manager.
Well, from that, we have to dovetail into a story that truly made U.S. history when Detroit was plunged into bankruptcy and the history books, becoming the largest municipal bankruptcy in United States history.
Yeah, so July 18th, 2013 is when the official filing happened. But as anyone who's followed Detroit knew that it was coming for a long time. And of course, Detroit was under the control of an emergency manager when it made that filing. The city faced $18 billion in debt and a really uncertain future. And as you remember, and as a lot of people remember, one of the biggest questions, one of the knottiest issues they had to work out is how can they resolve that debt and save some of the city's most valuable assets, particularly the Detroit Institute of Arts? Remember, there was a big fear that the DIA would just have to go away. They would have to sell off that amazing collection so that Detroit's retirees could have health care. And it took a lot of work to get that settled. They called it the grand bargain for months and months there. Our reporter Sarah Swick was following it. I know you were following it on stateside very closely as the twists and turns happened. And eventually, the grand bargain worked. They assembled philanthropists, they assembled the state, they had private funds, public funds, they put together almost $900 million, and they saved the DIA. They came up with a deal that Detroit retirees could live with, although it has been tough, as our own Sarah Swick has reported, and Detroit emerged from bankruptcy.
It's an amazing story to have been on the, you know, to been part of covering that, agreed. We're going to switch gears now to a story that is still reverberating, not just in Michigan, but nationally and internationally, and that is Larry Nassar. Remind us, when did the reckoning begin, Dustin?
Well, one moment that I think really changed things was on January 16th, 2018. The stories had become public at this point. Larry Nassar had been found guilty at this point. And it had been a story that we were covering closely in Michigan. Our own Kate Wells was there for the entire trial, and there were a lot of stories. But on that January day, Kate Wells retells this story in their podcast, Believe, that she hosted with Lindsay Smith, of Kyle Stevens, who got up to speak and give a witness statement during the sentencing of Larry Nassar.
I've been coming for you for a long time. I've told counselors your name in hopes that they would report you. I have reported you to Child Protective Services twice. I gave a testament to get your medical license revoked. You were first arrested on my charges. And now, as the only non-medical victim to come forward, I testified to let the world know that you are a repulsive liar and that those treatments were pathetically veiled sexual abuse. Perhaps you have figured it out by now, but little girls don't stay little forever. They grow into strong women that return to destroy your world.
You know, I'm hearing those words and I have tears in my eyes. Those Nassar survivors, that sisterhood of those survivors, and we could hear it with Kyle, that was life-altering.
Well, and as what Kate Wells said in her reporting was, it was that moment when Kyle Stevens stepped forward that many more survivors of Larry Nassar's abuse decided to step forward. At first, it wasn't clear how many people would speak. And then you remember, after that moment in that trial, hundreds of people came forward. More than 200 people spoke at that trial about his abuse, and he will serve the rest of his life behind bars.
It's a good time to remind everyone that if you have not yet, you need to hear all 8 episodes of the podcast Believed, hosted by Kate Wells and Lindsay Smith. It's just incredible reporting on a story that will rip your soul apart. I'm speaking with Michigan Radio's Dustin Dwyer as we review the stories that most shaped Michigan in the 2010s. And next up, police community relations.
So this was a story that was happening nationwide. I mean, the 2010s Black Lives Matter movement really got started and really shaped a lot of things in America. But it's worth remembering that all these things played out locally here in Michigan as well, really from the start of the decade. 2010 was the year that Ayanna Stanley Jones was shot by a Detroit police officer and killed. He claimed it was an accident. There were two trials over this case. In both trials, there was a hung jury. But it really awakened people, I think, even before the Black Lives Matter movement, to police in their communities and what was acceptable and what wasn't acceptable and how to hold police accountable when things like this happen. And that continued to be an issue in communities across Michigan and across the country for the entire decade. This year, just this year, the city of Detroit paid an $8.25 million settlement to the family of Ayanna Stanley Jones. There were other cases. You know, I live in Grand Rapids. The story of community and police relations has dominated in Grand Rapids all this time, and there was a series of videos of Grand Rapids police either arresting or pointing their weapons at children, unarmed people. That led to all kinds of reforms. There's a new police chief in Grand Rapids. There were tons of meetings. Still, a lot of people in Grand Rapids don't trust the police. So there's a lot of work left to be done in this area, but it's certainly something that shaped a lot of Michigan communities for the last 10 years.
And our next story happened in that burst of fevered bill passing that happened during lame duck in December 2012 when Michigan became a right-to-work state. What a moment in our state's history with those huge protests outside the Capitol in Lansing.
I mean, almost unthinkable. If you were coming into the decade in the 2010s, you would have thought, no way is Michigan going to become a right-to-work state. This is a union state, right? But it happened. And it happened after Wisconsin and Indiana had some fights, and they were both sort of, they were very contentious, especially in Wisconsin. And at the start of 2012, remember, Rick Snyder, the governor at the time, was asked about whether Michigan should become a right-to-work state. And he said it was too divisive. We shouldn't pursue it. But Republicans did pursue it. Republicans in the state legislature did pursue it. And it led to all kinds of controversy in Lansing.
We're almost out of time. I know there was other stories on your list, certainly when legal weed, recreational weed is a very big moment. Also, the flooding because of climate change, another big story. And then as we peer ahead to the presidential election coming up in November 2020, here we are talking about the fact that, on the eve of when President Trump's bringing his Merry Christmas tour to Michigan with a campaign stop in Battle Creek, Michigan became a swing state.
Yeah. Another thing that would have been unthinkable, at least to Democrats in 2010, is that Michigan went for a Republican presidential candidate. I mean, even in 2012, Michigan didn't go for a Republican. And that Republican was born in Michigan, Mitt Romney.
Right.
But Donald Trump won the state in 2016. And sure enough, he and Mike Pence have both promised they'll be here a lot in 2020.
Michigan Radio's Dustin Dwyer, looking back over the past decade, and I have enjoyed working with you, Dustin Dwyer, and I'll be listening along with everyone else as you plunge into covering what's happening in Michigan in the 2020s. Thank you.
Hey, likewise. And the 2010s at Michigan Radio was certainly shaped by you, and we will miss you a lot, Cindy. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Dustin.